Welcome to the NCO Journal's Sergeant's Time Podcast, featuring informal conversations with leaders at all levels, where you'll have the unique chance to learn what makes them tick, what their leadership styles are, and what inspires them. I'm your host, Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, the NCOIC of the NCO Journal. With us is Chaga Zapata, the Managing Editor. Today we welcome Command Sergeant Major Andrew A.J. Krogman to our podcast. Sergeant Major Krogman is the current Joint Special Operations Command Senior Enlisted Leader in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Born and raised in Northern California, Sergeant Major Krogman enlisted in the Army in 1995 as a combat engineer. After 2 years with the 14th Engineer Battalion in Fort Lewis, Washington, Sergeant Major Krogman completed Special Forces Assessment and Selection and the Special Forces Qualification Course in 1999, where he received a follow-on assignment to the 2nd Battalion, 1st Special Forces Group, Airborne. Some of Sergeant Major Krogman's key assignments include the Joint Cyber Operations Group Sergeant Major, the Strategic Reconnaissance and Enabling Command Sergeant Major, and is currently slated to take responsibility as the Command Senior Enlisted Leader of Special Operations Command in September. Sergeant Major Krogman, it's an honor to have you on the show.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. It's an honor to be here with you. I appreciate what you guys are doing, and I look forward to getting a chance to chat for a little bit.
Well, we appreciate having you. We like to start the podcast by talking a little bit about your past. You know, where did you grow up and what was life like there?
Yeah, no, thanks. Kid from Northern California, born and raised, the youngest of six kids. And I think that has a lot to do when you're the younger brother of a big group of a big family. You get a chance to learn a lot from them. And even at that age, you know, I would put myself at in the category of I survived high school. If it wasn't for my girlfriend then, now wife, that was probably the toughest time for me as a young kid going through high school, just figuring out life and whatnot. And, you know, stumbled into an Army recruiter office with a couple good friends of mine, and three of us decided to join the Army together. And, you know, and I look back at that moment there at 17 years old, deciding to join the Army, didn't have a clue where the Army would take me. And now I look back 30 years and what a journey, what an adventure. So I think that has a lot to do with your background, you know, and wherever anybody, you know, comes from, the opportunities and where you challenge yourself along the way. So it's been a great ride for sure.
Yeah. And I have to say, Sergeant Major, youngest of six kids, I mean, you got to have some pretty tough skin, right?
Yeah, you have to. You have to as the youngest getting picked on. But I tell you, each of them are, you know, good friends even now. And, you know, they're much older than me. So my brother closest to me is 7 years older than me. So a lot of them were out of the house when I was growing up. But at the time, I think over the years, we've actually become more or closer friends as adults and figuring each other out in our own life. So that's been great. And, you know, you learn a lot from them. You see your brothers and sisters make mistakes and do good things, and you figure out a way to learn from it, you know. I think that's the key piece.
When you first joined the Army, is there a memorable occurrence, say from the first 4 years, where you said to yourself, I'm glad I did this?
Yeah. First was like fear. Like, what did I get myself into? And I've had that moment throughout my career a couple of times where I say, oh, wow, this is, you know, what did you get yourself into this time? And, you know, it's funny, I reflect on it. Every time that I've had that feeling, it's always been a great adventure. Joining the Army again at 17, my girlfriend then, now wife, we had been dating in high school. And, you know, it's tough when you say, hey, like, I'm going to move away from my hometown, moving away from everything that I know about my family. My dad was drafted in the Army in Vietnam, so I understood a little bit of that service, but it was so many years removed, it wasn't as prominent in our household. But I, you know, the pride of knowing that your parents serve in the same way was kind of neat. But joining the Army right out of the gate was, oh boy, what did I get myself into? Came in as a combat engineer, as you kind of highlighted. Went out to Missouri, had never been to Missouri, really not much out of California, maybe probably the furthest east that I've ever been at some point. And so to understand what the big bad world has out there for you was a pretty firm memory at that, you know, at the age of 17, soon to be 18. I think I turned 18 in AIT maybe, or thereabouts. You know, after that, I think, you know, as I appreciated what the Army had to offer, I went up to now what we call Joint Base Lewis-McChord. It used to be called Fort Lewis. I think what I realized is what I was capable of. You know, I had been challenged in school, but not to the point where I probably cared as much. But joining the Army, I think being able to see the, it's bigger than yourself. It's about the team. You don't want to leave the team down. And, you know, I was super fortunate to have an incredible squad leader when I first got up to the 14th Engineers, a friend that I still reach out to on occasion. And I didn't realize the impact that a squad leader can have on a young private at that age, you know. So here I am 18, I show up my first unit. And that was the guy that everybody looked at, you know, like that squad leader, he set the standard. He was the one that challenged us. He was always calm and cool. And then just a few short years later, we had the opportunity to go to Special Forces Assessment and Selection together. So there were actually three of us from our squad that went to selection together and all made it through. And so, you know, I think at that moment, being able to look back and say, hey, what motivated you to do it? It was having NCOs and leaders around you that you looked up to that knew that you had potential. And like they put that challenge just outside of my reach. So I had to reach for it. I had to challenge myself. So early on, I think that was those are probably in the first few years, the most impactful things that I reflect on now.
Sorry, Major, I want to go back a little bit. I know that we're talking about your, when you first joined the Army and your first experiences, so to speak. But I'm wondering, when you joined the Army, you said your old man was in Vietnam. What was his reaction to your wanting to join the Army? And your mom's, I know what my mom's reaction was. She just about freaked out whenever I told her I was joining the Marine Corps.
Yeah, they had to sign the waiver for me to join the Army at 17, right? So I remember coming home and, you know, as a senior in high school going, hey, so I think I want to join the Army. And I remember my dad talking to my dad. I remember my dad telling me, are you sure this is what you want to do? And I go, no, but I'm sure I have to do something. And this sounds like a good idea. And he's like, well, I think I support that. And I think you're going to do great. You know, my mom, on the other hand, I think equally is supportive, to your point, probably a little bit more nervous of like, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. I'm going to join the Army and I'll see where the train goes. But both of them were super supportive and realized that I needed a different challenge. Staying where I was in our little hometown was great. And I have great friends that I still keep in touch with there. But they realized that I needed to get out and spread my wings. I needed to go do something else, which I think is good for, you know, young men and women to be able to go challenge themselves and find a pathway and do the things that, you know, follow their passion and their heart a little bit and see where it goes.
Just a quick note for me, Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
When I
yeah.
came back from boot camp, my mom had just watched Full Metal Jacket. My mom and dad watched Full Metal Jacket. And that's why, and she freaked out even worse once I finished boot camp. So yeah, that was an interesting experience for me. But it ended up being a great adventure, just like what you said.
Yeah, no, and it has been. I wouldn't do it any differently. When I've talked to young service members and folks and they ask you, what would you do any differently? And I wouldn't. You could take the challenge yourself, see what opportunity is out there. And the moment you feel a little bit uncomfortable, you're probably in the right space and you got to go a little further. So it's been great.
Well, let's get back to talking about the start of your military career. Now, was there a specific, either a person or an event that kind of got you started on the path that you are right now? You know, that took you to, I'm sure there was all kinds of forks in the road, but that got you to this point in time.
Oh man, we could sit here and talk for hours of the folks that I could sit here and thank and recognize that have got me to where I am today. A couple things that I'll share, I guess. You know, one, I now think of it from my lens here and a phrase that we've heard it one way or another, but I like to say it as purposeful talent management. But if I go back to the beginning of my career, you know, I was the product of somebody doing purposeful talent management along the way. And I didn't know it. And so again, I could sit here for hours and thank everybody that opened a door, challenged me, that got me to where I am. Probably the most important person I would recognize is my wife. You know, we dated in high school and the hardest decision I probably made at that age was, hey, I need to leave and go to the Army. She was like, well, what about us? And I said, hey, if I'm going to be the man that you deserve, I need to go do something and grow up. And that was probably step one that allowed me to see that it's bigger than me. And there's other things at play there. Leaders along the way, I mentioned my first squad leader when I came in And, you know, we talk about how important it is to be a, you know, first line supervisor and the power of squad leaders and leaders up and down the chain of command. But man, I looked at that guy, you know, as an older brother, as a friend, as a mentor, and I would have followed him anywhere. And I did. And we got a chance to stay connected over the years. But it was an opportunity there where he saw in, you know, young private first class Krogman at the time that I needed a different challenge. And I had learned the things that I was learning, but he continued to, you know, to throw the challenge out there a little bit further. And I think that that is probably the theme, if I were to reflect back on key leaders throughout my career, that that saw something in an individual and you can encourage them to take a bold step, and then also have the grace and have the support to allow them to take that step. And you know, should they fail, you're there to help them along the way. But should they succeed, you know, you're there to help cheer them on and support them along the way. That's probably the biggest part when I look back on that.
I would imagine too that, well, now at the level that you are, Sergeant Major, I think that you touch a lot, you know, your leadership touches a lot more people. You have has a lot more influence, but you can't deny that first level, you know, leader, team leader,
right,
or whatever, has so much influence. So how you are at that point, like, this is for all the young guys out there, you know, how you are as a young leader affects not just you, but that one person that you touch and those people who are your subordinates. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I would not have seen the opportunities or probably followed my heart in those challenges had it not been for those leaders at the initial level, you know, those first line supervisors, those squad leaders, those team leaders. But to kind of unpack it a bit more to your question, it's really how you set the standard at that level. My squad leader then, you know, was quick to say, you know, he was calm and cool and collected, but he was firm and say, hey, here's the standard, you know, and we did PT every morning and we were out training every, you know, throughout the week, and every Thursday afternoon, sergeant's time, we were out doing something. And whether it was one of the team leaders that was leading us doing it, or he was out there, you know, with us every single step along the way. But, you know, what you invest in those people at that age and that time in their career is so critical, because you can either, as we've all seen, you know, you get people that come in the military and I see it now, it's in across the joint force, where you get folks that come in the military and they think they're looking for one thing and they find something different. That can be good or bad. You know, but first line leaders at that level, man, you have such an influence on folks. And so to be able to bring somebody in, you know, welcome them into the military culture, set the standard, hold them to account, but also encourage them and see them grow and flourish over their time in their career is so important. You know, that's the piece that I think is brilliant and great about our military. It's how we bring people in and enculturate them in and allow them to develop and grow.
Sergeant Major, as a young NCO, when you were, you know, back then with that team or squad,
yeah,
maybe you could pull something out. Was there a particular challenge, something challenging that you faced, and maybe give me how did you handle it, and then maybe versus how you would handle it now?
Yeah, a couple come to mind. I would tell you, you know, within a few short years, I went from, you know, the combat engineer community and then came over into the special forces community. And I think the piece that I'd probably pull out or unpack a little bit more is, what does it mean to be a young leader as you come into the military? Because there's an element of, and I'll put myself kind of time and place. Here's an example. You know, as a Sergeant Krogman, E5 type, I graduated the Q course. I feel like, you know, man, I'm on cloud nine. I'd earned my Green Beret. I'd finished language school. And now I'm packing up my family and now young son. And we drove back out to, you know, Fort Lewis, Washington is my first assignment. And, you know, in that moment you think, man, I'm on top of the world. And then realizing, I guess that first lesson is realizing that that's where the hard work really starts. That's just the beginning, and you have to continue to challenge yourself. You have to, you know, in the soft community and in our world, you know, the idea of you have to earn it every day really rings true. And if I were to go back and reflect, you know, then young Sergeant Krogman, who at that time, you know, what did I know? But I'm on my first, you know, SFODA, and I think I'm on cloud nine, but realizing that, and that is where the work really starts, and you got to earn it every day.
Sergeant Major, with your extensive experience in the Special Forces community, we'd like to take this time to ask, as the Joint Special Operations Command Sergeant Major, what are some goals or initiatives that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, it's understanding what it means to be joint. I've had the privilege of serving in the joint community for the better part of the last 15 or so years. But what does that really mean? A big initiative, something that we've been driving here is really understanding it. You know, we have joint professional military education courses that people can go to, which are good. It helps you understand a little bit of the art and or a little bit of the science, rather, of what does it mean to be joint. But really understanding teammates and what talent management looks like, you know, on the Air Force side, on the Marine Corps side, the Space Force side, and on the Navy side, of the lingo, the culture, the differences, a little bit of the nuances. And so really understanding joint has been a bit of a journey I've been on for the last few years here in this job. And as it ties to purposeful talent management, you have to appreciate it from the joint side. I spend, in this current job, I spend a lot of time talking with the different, you know, senior enlisted and officers across each of the joint service elements that are my peers, to one, understand how we're taking care of people, to, you know, how we're doing career development for folks, how we're mentoring folks, when it's time for people to take on different assignments so they can continue to advance and promote along those lines. So purposeful talent management has been a bit of a journey that I've been on, and which I think is ultimately important that we all have to own part of it.
Can I ask about that purposeful talent management in regards, like, let's just say, use Staff Sergeant Cox here for as an example, young staff sergeant, say, with 10 years in the service, who has, he's got a small team of soldiers who he's in charge of. So what, how would that translate to that young NCO?
Well, it's good. I think a lot of it starts to, what I love to hear in the story, and it ties into purposeful talent management, but the story that I love to ask as we kind of talked here is, what motivated you to join the military? And what is your purpose? What is your why? What makes you happy? What feeds your soul? All those types of things. Now, recognizing that people make decisions in the military and certain career fields, not because it necessarily always feeds their soul, but it's an opportunity, it's a job, it's a career. But as I've talked to young service members over the years, sometimes and quite often, they don't know there's other opportunities of their service. And so understanding truly like what motivates them. Here's an example that I'll tell you. I got a chance to be the CSM of a cyber group within the Joint Enterprise. And man, probably the most eye-opening assignment, but one of the highlights of my leadership time, I would tell you, in my own mind, because I had to learn a whole new community of people. And incredible professionals that are just at the very, very top of their game. But in a way, they found their way to this cyber community, not necessarily because the service sent them there, but because they had an interest, they applied, they went through an assessment and selection, and we hired them. And so what I would often have there is a number of people with different MOSs and different AFSCs, which is the MOS on the Air Force side, and different career fields and whatnot, that would find their way because of their passionate about the mission and their career. Sometimes the career map would be incongruent with where their passion and what they wanted to do. And so my journey, if you will, my goal to help them is, how do I best align your passion, your purpose, your motivation with where your career map is going? And sometimes, you know, it's being able to understand where they're at in life as a service member, you know, with family, without family, where they're at in life matters and what they're able to do career-wise. And so a lot of it is that. It's getting to know the service member at the human level and understanding what are they really passionate and motivated about.
Sergeant Major, moving back to some of the things that we were talking about at the beginning of this part of the conversation, was about your goals and initiatives. Would you mind explaining a little bit about, what it's like to work in the joint space?
Yeah. You know, an easy way to explain it, it's almost each service has its own language and a little bit of its own cultural makeup, right? It's getting to appreciate it and understand each of the different cultures of the organization and how people are motivated in each of those services. You know, as a former Marine, and I use this as an example, you know, when you talk to a Marine and you get to know them, they will always say, hey, I'm a former Marine or I'm a Marine first, because that's part of the Marine culture. Now, within your service as a Marine, you did plenty of things, but there's a little bit of an identity that you tie to that, you know, your service as a Marine. And each of the different branches have that own, have their own sort of grounding culture and morals and values that that make up, you know, our great military force. It's getting to know it, you know, as you serve along people in different units, you get to know people from all sorts of walks of life and all sorts of backgrounds. And as you travel the world, you get to understand different cultures of the world and why people are the way they are. And the joint service is no different. You know, when you really look across, and I have the privilege and honor in this job to be able to see pretty broadly across the joint force. And man, it is truly remarkable. The things that our Air Force teammates are able to do is just brilliant. And when you get to know it and you get to understand their culture and how they operate, it's just remarkable. You know, on the Navy side, equally so. And you look at what our Navy is capable of doing, both big conventional Navy, fleet Navy, as well as the Navy Special Operations Community, just truly remarkable. Same thing on the Marine Corps side, as we understand how our Marines operate within large-scale combat operations. And as we look bigger across the conventional service, as well as the soft enterprise, our Marine teammates are vital and a critical aspect to it. On the Space Force side, as our newest sort of service and teammate there, and we actually have a handful of Space Guardians on our team here, and getting to know this really unique new capability that they bring to the fight is pretty tremendous. And so it's really, I would say, it's about appreciation and perspective. You know, appreciating, just like here's a sports analogy, and this is where my brain goes a lot of times when I think about this is, you know, you look at the best sports teams that are out there and pick whatever sport, I'll use football in this example, but you know, the teams that that consistently win the Super Bowl, they have a very strong team of teams. There's these micro teams on the offensive line, and there's these micro teams on the defensive line and special teams and all this other stuff. That is kind of a representation if you think of how the joint force fights. The more we understand about each other, the more that we are interoperable together and appreciate each other, the better and tight-knit we're going to be when push comes to shove and we got to operate and we got to deploy and conduct operations together. So it's really about appreciation and perspective. Getting to know what that person's superpower is on your team is really, really helpful. And so if you haven't gone to understand what our joint service teammates do on a day-to-day and spending some time in the hangar, understanding what our maintainers are doing on some of our aircraft and spending some time, you know, out in the boat barn, if you will, to appreciate all the work that goes in the maintenance and sustainment to make sure that we can operate the way we can is a pretty important perspective that you got to understand in the joint world.
I think there's one thing that translates across all services though, and that's, you know, leadership. When it comes to being a good leader, I think those are the quality, whatever qualities that make you a good leader, whether it's in the Army, Marine Corps, Navy, whatever, those qualities I think are what I'd like to talk about right now. Can you share a story about somebody that you know who exemplified the qualities that make a person a good leader? Would you have a story about that, Sergeant Major?
You know, when it comes to leadership, here's the piece that I'd share with you. I think you actually have to zoom out a little bit, if you will, and say, what does good leadership look like? How do you define it? You know, we read about it in a book, but I really think it's an application of science. And leadership, I think, is more about the art of the science of leadership. We learn a lot about the science of it, and there's plenty of books written about it. And every time we go to a professional military education school, it's good that we go through and we read all that. But there's a little bit of art that only comes with actually applying it and learning how to go through the numbers. So the story I'll tell you related to that is, I was a battalion level CSM, and myself and my battalion commander were going through and doing our talent management review of all of our company level command teams, both O4 majors as well as E9 sergeants major. And my commander and I, as we typically did when we had to talk through a lot of stuff, we'd throw a rucksack on and start for a walk. And so that morning we walked out of our little compound, and we probably walked for hours that day. And so what I want to share with you is really kind of a result of that conversation, which I think was pretty key. you know, as we were stepping out of the compound and walking into the woods, he says, hey, if we were to rank our leaders, and in this case, I don't think it's necessarily officer business or NCO business, it's leader business. And my commander and I, we had a great relationship, and he says, hey, I want your opinion on, if you had to rank order, you know, we had 14 different command teams at that, you know, at that level, I think company level command teams, an O4 major and an E9 sergeant major. And he says, hey, how would you rank them 1 to 14? That became a very long walk that day. But it was one of those things where, how do you define in our organization there, but what really, how do you define what makes a really good leader? We were blessed that we had some really high performing folks. At this point in their career, they had already been through 2 different assessment and selection programs, were performing at probably their highest peak of their career. And so you're really splitting hairs when you talk about this person is performing better than the next person. But what ensued after that, you know, several hours of walk and talk, if you will, was something that I've come to adopt and appreciate. I call it the 5 factors. It's a way to look at what does a really good leader look like? What do they do really well? You know, if you go back to the sports analogy and you watch a player on the field, you can watch the game reels and you can pick out, oh, they do that really well, and this person does that really well. And you can kind of draw those things out. But what I've come to appreciate, these 5 factors, really, it's something that I strive to do better every day. It's definitely not something that I have figured out to do perfectly, but something that I strive to do better every day. And so really, I think first and foremost, it comes down to presence. Leaders that lead well, I look at and I go, man, I wish I could be like them someday. They have a really good presence about them, not just present for duty, but that matters. You got to be present for duty, but a presence about them. When they're not there and you go, I wonder what so-and-so would say. You know, I wonder what my squad leader would say right now. Or I wonder what my company commander would say. Or I wonder what my first sergeant or platoon sergeant would say right now. So really good leaders, their presence is felt. They're engaged. They're involved in conversation with you. They get to know you. Going back to the earlier conversation about talent management, they take the time to make it personal. So presence really matters. The second factor that I've come to appreciate over the years is you got to be a lifelong learner, and you got to evolve your leader mindset along the way. So what makes you a good team leader or platoon leader or a squad leader, platoon sergeant, first sergeant, isn't going to make you be a good sergeant major at some point in your career. And so you have to constantly challenge yourself. You have to have an evolving leader mindset, and you have to be a lifelong learner, whether it's read a book that you wouldn't normally read to challenge your perspective, read something to help you understand perspective better. In the conversation earlier about in the joint force, like get to know your joint teammates. Your leader mindset has to evolve along the way, because the old adage, what got you here won't get you there. Leaders that I look up to, that I strive to be like someday, they have an evolving leader mindset all the time. Allows them to kind of grow. The third piece I think is key is, I say communicate to ... And what I mean there is be intentional. There's plenty of leaders that you can look around at different services that will transmit a lot of information, but maybe it's not as purposeful and intentional as it could be. So, you know, communicate to mentor, to counsel, to educate, to inform, to encourage. Communicate to learn, right? That's a huge thing of a whole art and skill of communication is asking good questions to understand people and to learn in the environment that you're in. And many a times, to my point earlier, I look at leaders that I look up to and I want to be like someday. And the way they communicate is just, it's artistry. They do it really well. They can ask questions. They can learn. They can give guidance. They can be firm. They can be caring. They can be encouraging, but that in of itself, be intentional with your communication is key. Number 4, I think for good leaders is they're not afraid of moving to the point of friction in an organization or in a battle. When you know there's something not right in an organization, you got to have the courage to sort of lean in, find the problem and the friction, and to be able to root through it and lead through it. You know, on the field of battle, it's the same way. You understand the crux of the battle. And those leaders need to move to the point of that friction to be able to change the tide of battle in that sense. And so leaders that I look at and I want to aspire to be someday is somebody who moves to the point of friction, both operationally and organizationally. And the last one, which I think is probably the most important one, like any good sports analogy, you got to follow through. You know, you don't make a home run by just making contact with the ball. You got to swing all the way through it. And follow through, it might just be something simple. It might just be a handwritten note to tell somebody congratulations. It might just be seeing somebody as you walk across the your unit space, check in with them after a weekend or after a hard weekend or a long deployment. But following through really, I think, is probably the key to that. It's good enough to leaders that start an initiative, but it takes a lot more drive and motivation and energy to follow up and follow through on the things that you've started to keep the momentum going, to really make a difference in somebody's life. So those are kind of the five factors that I've come to. I jot down in every one of my notebooks, and it's written on my whiteboard here in the office, things that I try to shoot for every day. But also, you know, to your point about leadership earlier, is when I counsel folks, sergeants, majors that work with me, or leaders or officers or teammates, I share this same thing with them. And I think that's how you hold each other accountable. You know, I have the privilege right now to work with a vice admiral in the Navy. And, you know, that was part of my initial counseling. Like, these are the things that I'm going to hold myself to account. And I need your help as a battle buddy to keep me on track there.
Can you tell us about something that you failed at, or maybe something that you over the course of your career that didn't go quite the way that you wanted it to? Can you tell us what you learned from it and how you got past it?
Yeah, no, that's good. Thank you. You know, when I reflect back on my career and things that, you know, I probably fail every day in one thing or another, which is why I have those things written on my board to remind myself of, hey, you got to earn it every day. If I look back on things that I wish I would have done differently, or maybe there was a turning point there, is I failed to appreciate what leadership really was at a young age. As I mentioned earlier in there, I was fortunate to have a really good squad leader and a good example. You know, I was fortunate to have older brothers and sisters that, you know, great examples, and parents that are great examples to learn from. But coming into the military, not understanding the difference between the art and the science is, hey, sure, you can learn the science behind it, but it's a lot harder on the art side. And so, you know, as a young leader, as a young sergeant and a leader there, you know, in the special forces, of thinking that you know more than you really do, and you get humbled when you stumble and fall and you have somebody help pick you up and dust you off and say, hey, there's a little bit more to this than you may realize. And so I think the point of that is, there was probably times throughout my careers where I was probably out ahead of my skis a little bit and not preserving relationships as much along the way. You know, the point of that is, there is, you got to realize you don't get to anywhere in your career without having, you know, good relationships, good teammates left and right of you, you know, being a mentor to somebody and reaching out and finding somebody to mentor you. And so I was fortunate as a young sergeant and then staff sergeant to promote pretty quick in the special forces, and, you know, blessed in that sense. But I probably failed to appreciate, you know, the real art versus the science of leadership, and what I might have missed out in reps and sets in the conventional side as I got into the special forces side, you know, pretty early in my career, of just, you know, how do you take care of people at that age? You know, how do you take care of a battle buddy who, you know, is struggling, you know, in service or struggling family-wise, and, you know, help mentor and coach them through difficult parts in their life? And I think that's why it's shaped me now to put a more greater emphasis on the friendships and the relationships that I have across the Joint Force now, taking the time to do purposeful talent management, teaching and coaching and mentoring people along the way the best you can. Because you don't know when somebody's going to have a crap day, and you might be that one person that gave them a bit of encouragement that day, when you didn't know they needed it, but they needed it very most.
As a final question for the Sergeant's Time podcast, we ask all of our guests, what advice would present day you give newly promoted Sergeant Krogman back in the day?
Oh man, how much time do we have? No, if I could go back and reflect on it, or if I could go back and tell myself something then, I'd say a couple things. One, don't be in a rush. Enjoy the journey. Enjoy where you're at. Work hard. The promotions will come. Different assignments will come. But don't be in a hurry to move too fast throughout your career. There's plenty of opportunities out there. The other bits of advice I'd give myself then is do hard things, both physically and mentally. The moment where you feel a little bit uneasy, a little bit of professional anxiety, you're probably at that point where you're doing something outside of your comfort zone and you're going to grow no matter what you're doing.
Sergeant Major, thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for more interesting guests and inspiring conversations right here on the NCO Journal. Submit your articles, get published. Don't forget to check out our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll see you next time on the Sergeant's Time Podcast.